You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, from suicide attempts to withholding of medications by staff, we'll hear how Wisconsin inmates describe their experience in solitary confinement.
First, according to data from Pew Research in 2015, women throughout the United States earned 83% of what men earned. That wage gap gets more drastic when race is factored into the equation.
And there are long-term issues with the wage gap. Namely, the buying power of women is reduced and requires women to work more to close that gap. This impact extends to families and children.
Vicki Shabo joins us now. She's vice president at the National Partnership for Women and Families, a nonprofit that advocates for women in a number of arenas, including equal pay. They recently took a look at the data and calculated the long-term effects the wage gap can have on women and families, and they look at the way those disparities play out in states like Wisconsin. Vicki, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Rob. It's great to be with you.
Well, we touched briefly on the Pew data about the wage gap nationally. Talk a little more about that, though. What do these differences look like?
Well, so here at the National Partnership, we did an analysis for Equal Pay Day last week and found that, on average, women who work full-time year-round in the United States earn $40,742 compared to $51,212 for a typical man, which means that overall women in the U.S. are paid 80 cents for every dollar paid to man on an annual basis, which amounts to an annual gender wage gap of more than $10,400.
Now, there's a lot of argument out there about the causes. Some people are saying this is mostly gender discrimination accounting for this gap. Other people saying it's different career paths for men and women, in a shortened nutshell of the argument there. Can you talk about some of the causes behind this disparity in pay?
Well, there are a number of causes of the wage gap. Of course, women and men often choose different types of jobs. Women are more often cycling in and out of the workforce or facing career interruptions because they still have a disproportionate share of caregiving responsibilities. And so there are many different factors, but even when all of those factors are controlled for, when you control for education, race, occupation, region of the country, all of those identifiable factors, there's still close to 40% of that gap that is unexplained. And researchers that have looked at this over the years chalk that up to both implicit bias and really overt discrimination.
And what do things look like here in Wisconsin? You broke this down by state. How do we stack up when it comes to the wage gap?
So Wisconsin falls pretty close to the middle, just above average. The gap in Wisconsin is 22 cents, which means that women on average are paid 78 cents for every dollar paid to men, which amounts to an annual gap of about $10,700. So not great, but not as bad as some other states out there.
And you also looked at how this breaks down by race. So how do Black and Latino women fare nationally, and if you have the data, by state here in Wisconsin when it comes to the wage gap?
Yeah, so in the United States, Black women who hold full-time year-round jobs are paid typically 63 cents for every dollar paid to a white non-Hispanic man. Latinas are paid 54 cents for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men. In Wisconsin, Black women fare just a little bit under average, 62 cents for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men. Latinas are paid 53 cents. So that's about average overall, a little bit worse than nationwide. Asian women in Wisconsin, though, notably, are paid 64 cents for every dollar paid to white non-Hispanic men, compared to nationally, where the average is 85 cents. So there is where we start to see some pretty dramatic drop-off and really need to start to ask what's going on there, whether it's occupations or something else.
Talking to Vicki Shabo from the National Partnership for Women and Families, looking at the wage disparities between men and women nationally and here in Wisconsin. And Vicki, you went a step beyond in some of your recent analysis, beyond the wage gap itself, and looked at the outcome, what it means for women and for families. So what did you find?
That's right, and this is where it gets real. We found that on average, if the annual wage gap were eliminated, in Wisconsin, so looking specifically at your state, a typical woman could afford 13 additional months of childcare, more than a year of tuition and fees at a four-year public university or the full cost of tuition and fees at a two-year community college. That one always gets me, the full cost of tuition and fees at a two-year community college. 79 more weeks of food for her family, more than a year and a half's worth of food, 8 more months of mortgage and utility payments, or over 1 additional year of rent. So when you start to look at it that way, it isn't just about cents on the dollar, but really about the ability of women to provide for themselves and their families on an ongoing basis. And that is just incredibly sobering, and really creates some urgency around solving this problem.
Right, and this is something that accumulates over a lifetime, over the course of a career.
That's right, that's right. Some research done by a colleague organization of ours put the annual, the lifetime cost of the wage gap at close to $500,000 for women overall.
And you also start to look at possible solutions. And here it seems like there's a wide variety of things. Let's look at things that tackle kind of overt or close to overt gender discrimination when it comes to wages. What kind of things could help tackle that part of the problem?
Well, one of the solutions that's out there is called the Paycheck Fairness Act. And this is a federal proposal. It was just reintroduced on Equal Pay Day the week before last, but has been introduced many other times and has passed the House of Representatives in the past. And this would start to tighten up some of the excuses that are provided by employers about why they are paying women differently or people of color differently. It would give women the ability and all people the ability to discuss wages in their workplace, their compensation with coworkers and colleagues without fear of retaliation or adverse consequences on the job. It would reduce the use or limit the use of prior salary history in hiring and compensation determinations, and it would provide tools both to employers and employees that would help them to counter some of that implicit bias that might exist, to help them understand fair compensation practices and give individual employees better tools for negotiating their pay.
I've seen that salary history issue come up a lot lately. The idea there, tell me if I have this right, is that if we've got this uneven system now and we base future salaries on that uneven system, we're just going to keep replicating this on out into the future. Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So if women are graduating to a pay gap from college, and we know from some data that's out there that is what's happening, that there's about a 9-cent gap or so just right out of college, and you think about how prior salary is then used in future job negotiations or in future hiring decisions, you're just compounding that initial disparity, and it just grows over time. And that's part of what contributes to, you know, calculations about the lifetime wage gaps.
Getting into another cause of the wage difference, you mentioned earlier that women are in our society more prone to maybe take time off of work, either to go part-time or leave the workforce for a while for family reasons, and that is part of the cause here. But your organization says more family-friendly workplace policies might help address that cause as well.
That's right. So we work here on things like paid family and medical leave and paid sick days, which makes it possible for people to take time away from their jobs to care for themselves and their loved ones, both for routine illnesses in the case of paid sick days and for more serious family and medical needs, whether the birth of a new child or adoption of a new child, or to care for a seriously ill family member or for one's own serious health condition, and for military families to be able to deal with those exigencies arising from a family member's deployment. Particularly around childbirth and caregiving for family members, we know that when women don't, and men don't, have paid leave, but especially women, because they are the ones who are more often doing the caregiving, that they are more likely to leave the workforce. And in contrast, when women have access to paid leave around the birth of a child, they are more likely to be working 9 to 12 months later. They are more likely to earn higher wages. And both women and men are less likely to use public assistance or food stamps or SNAP in the year following a child's birth. Similarly, at the other end of the spectrum, women and men who leave the workforce to care for an aging parent lose more than $300,000 in income and retirement savings on average. So we're talking here about, you know, people cycling out of work rather than being able to stay attached to work when they have some ability to take time off. And it's really contributing to the overall health of the economy as well.
We're talking to Vicki Shabo right now. She's vice president at the National Partnership for Women and Families. That's a nonprofit that advocates for women, for pay equity, and more. She's talking to us now about the gender wage gap, causes and solutions, both in Wisconsin and nationwide.
And you can join our conversation. Are you affected by the wage gap? Do you see gender discrimination in your line of work? And what do you think needs to be done to close that wage gap? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment over on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation now about the gender wage gap, disparities between what men and women make on the job. We're talking with Vicki Shabo. She's vice president at the National Partnership for Women and Families.
And you can join the conversation. Do you feel as though you've experienced the gender wage gap? What do you see as the causes and maybe the solutions for different pay scales for men and women? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Vicki, this is an issue that people have been talking about for a number of years now. Are things changing? Has this gap narrowed much over the years?
The gap has narrowed very, very, very slowly. So back in 1963, I believe that women were paid 59 cents for every dollar paid to men. We're now up to 80 cents. Within the last 5 years, it's gone from 77 to 80. So at this rate, researchers predict that the wage gap will not close until close to 2060. So we've got to have some interventions here because our women and families are really suffering as a result of the wage gap.
And I looked, you broke down the wage gap, not just by state, but also by congressional district. One thing that struck me about Wisconsin, the narrowest wage gap, the thing that was closest was in the greater Milwaukee area. But it looked like that was because the overall wage, the wages of men were lower on average than the rest of the country. So that was kind of narrowing it, but not in a way that anybody's going to be celebrating.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right, and you're correct. Wisconsin, for women are paid 90 cents for every dollar paid to men who work full-time year-round. But, yeah, the overall wages for men in Milwaukee are much lower, just $41,000 typically a year compared to women's $37,000 or so. And what we, you know, what working families really need is to raise wages altogether, and that means raising the minimum wage, which will help to boost wages overall. It means the kinds of family-friendly policies that also boost the economy that we've been talking about, like paid sick days and paid family and medical leave. It means more full-time jobs and not so much use of part-time jobs that often have very unpredictable, inflexible schedules that make it hard for people to hold a second job or get more education or even figure out a stable child care arrangement. So there are lots of different interventions in addition to, obviously, things like the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would address the discrimination that still exists.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Teddy is with us in Washington, D.C. Teddy, hi.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Hi, I think I certainly agree with the federal pay provisions, and I think the a predominant factor in this is the fact that women are much more likely to take time off to nurture and care for children than men are, and that takes time away from their careers. And I think along with not just an increased minimum wage, but a living wage across the board federally, in addition to a federal legislation which provides family leave for both men and women, will both assist with nurturing for the next generation, as well as equalizing the pay gap.
Teddy, thanks for the call. Vicki, some of the ideas you had talked about there, But paid family leave for men and women might go a long way, he says, to help narrow the gap.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that that Teddy brought that up. The policies that we support are absolutely gender neutral. They apply equally to women and men. That's always been a cornerstone of the kinds of policies we've supported back to 1993 when we were instrumental in passing the Family and Medical Leave Act, which provides unpaid job-protected leave, but absolutely. At the same time as we need to recognize that women are still doing a disproportionate share of caregiving, we also need to recognize and celebrate that when men have access to leave, they are more likely to take that time. And, you know, research out there shows that when men do take time to care for a new child, for example, women's wages actually go up as well. So absolutely, gender-neutral time is critical to the kind of equality and equity that we're seeking with respect to pay.
Thanks for the call, Teddy. We're talking to Vicky Shabo from the National Partnership for Women and Families, looking at the pay gap between men and women. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234 as an employee or an employer. How do things work at your workplace? Are things transparent? Do you know if there's a pay gap where you work? We'll go back to our callers now. Carl is with us in Madeline Island. Carl, hi.
Hey, how are you doing this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Carl?
Well, I have two daughters, and one's finishing grad school this month, and another is a junior in college. And, you know, during their dating lives, I've got a kind of a litmus test for the guys they're with that they're starting to get serious about, and ask them if they feel that there should be legislation guaranteeing equal pay for genders.
And what kind of answers do you get?
Well, sometimes I get the answer I want. Sometimes I get no answer. And sometimes I think that they're pulling the wool over my eyes, or trying to.
They're across the board on that, huh?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. So, but that's just my comment. And thanks for this topic.
Carl, thanks for the call. Vicky, do you see public support for some of the policies you're talking about?
Absolutely. There is overwhelming public support for each of the policy proposals that we've talked about here. Equal pay, something that is really non-controversial among voters, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. Same is true of paid family and medical leave. Some recent research that we did just in conjunction with the election showed close to 8 in 10 voters that support a national paid family and medical leave law that would allow women and men time to care for a new child, a seriously ill loved one, or their own serious health condition, including two-thirds of Republicans and more than three-quarters of independents. So these policies are not controversial. Democrats and Republicans know that fair pay is essential to economic security and to fairness. They know that whether you're, you know, regardless of your party identification, people need time to be there with their loved ones when it counts the most and to care for themselves.
Carl, thanks for that call from up on Madeline Island. We'll go next to Darlene with us in Green Bay. Darlene, hi.
Hi. My comment is that years ago, men were expected to earn more than women because they were supporting family. But in today's world, I'm guessing 90% of single-parent families are headed by women. And besides that, they have child care to pay for. And I've never heard anyone mention that discrepancy, too.
Darlene, thanks for the call. Vicky, I don't know about the number, but more women likely to be heads of single-parent households, and that creates, obviously, economic challenges.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, the overarching story that the data tells and the reality for most people is that most children are growing up in households where, whether it's a single parent or two parents, those parents are working. They are contributing to the family's economic situation and well-being. Two-thirds of moms are key breadwinners in families. So, you know, these outdated notions, we often hear these stories from not even that long ago that of overt discrimination where employers say to a woman, well, you're not supporting a family, so I'm not going to pay you as much. That's really the leave it to beaver era gone by. Today, whether it's a single parent, and there are an increasing number of single parent households usually headed by women, or whether it's two parent families, folks are working hard to get by, and wage disparities really only exacerbate economic difficulties that families are having.
Darlene, thanks for that call. Vicki, I understand some people are advocating for more equal pay, say part of the problem is not enough information within a particular company or within a particular industry. There's a lot of data we don't have, and there have been efforts to track that so we know, and the leaders of a company, for that matter, know whether they have a problem with this.
That's right. And one of the good things that we're seeing from some leading companies is voluntary pay audits that are being conducted so that companies are looking at their own pay practices. We need to go a step further, though. One of the things that the Obama administration did before leaving office was finalize a data compensation collection report that the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission is to put into effect beginning this year, with data that has to be reported by some by companies at the beginning of next year. We're starting to see that under attack by large, well-heeled organizations like the Chamber of Commerce and some other organized, relatively conservative business organizations. We actually need people to be speaking out with the Office of Management and Budget and with the EEOC, saying that we want that compensation data to be collected. It would be collected by gender, race, and ethnicity for different types of occupations or positions within a company, and that will allow employers themselves to identify and correct discriminatory or just unequal pay practices, whether there's motive behind it or not, and also allow the EEOC and the Department of Labor to better target investigations and enforcement of existing equal pay laws for companies and especially for federal contractors.
You know, for a woman out there listening who's in the workforce, all this nationwide data might sound interesting and disturbing. But for that woman in the workforce, is there advice out there to, I don't know, negotiate a higher salary to close some of these gaps?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, you know, there are best practices for negotiation, but you have to keep in mind that not everybody feels comfortable advocating or safe within their workplace. There are some protections under the National Labor Relations Act for people who are getting together to talk about their pay for the purpose of bringing it up in their workplace, for banding together. But often, you know, the balance of power really lies with employers, and particularly for lower wage workers who don't feel that they have a lot of bargaining power. It's very difficult to raise the issue of fair pay. And part of what the Paycheck Fairness Act would do is clarify and strengthen the protections that exist for workers that do find out about or want to discuss their pay with their coworkers.
Vicki, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me and for tackling this important topic.
That's Vicki Schabo from the National Partnership for Women and Families. She joined us today to talk about the gender wage gap in Wisconsin and around the nation.